Good morning, Arizona. Thank you for joining us this morning. We have on the telephone from University High School, we have Megan, and she's going to tell us really quickly how we can prepare to apply for college. That's her job. Megan, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I know you put together, and I put it on our website on the blog page, you put together a very thorough list of what people need to do, parents and students alike, to prepare for college. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so on the page, there'll be five steps kind of that junior students can take, you know, this semester and over the summer to prepare for the college application process this fall. And so, you know, preparing resumes, kind of thinking through their coursework and where they want to apply. And there's a bunch of links and resources also that they can use to help them with that.
Yeah, it's very thorough, and I think it'll be a great resource for everybody. So if you have a student in high school, you know somebody who has a student in high school, refer them to the lawmatters1030.org webpage, go to the blog page, and right underneath where the P3 phone app that I'm going to talk about in a minute is, there's a huge list of how to prepare and make your life a little bit easier while you're planning for college. I appreciate you calling in this morning. We want to also tell everybody, mark your calendar, because what day is in September?
September 4th.
September 4th, we're going to do a whole show about the college preparedness and what you need to do before time's up, because there are deadlines you have to meet.
Definitely.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Megan. Appreciate it. And we look forward to September.
Of course. Talk to you then.
Okay. Take care. Okay. Today, there's going to be a virtual event. I think everybody who was listening last week, we had the Department of Homeland Security on, as well as Tucson Police Department. And there's going to be a virtual event today. If you go to the lawmatters1030.org webpage and go to the events tab, you'll see the event is listed there. It starts at 2 o'clock, and they're going to be talking about human trafficking and so much more. The speakers will be actually a survivor. Natasha will be talking. She's a survivor. Jennifer Crawford from Tucson Police Department, and Tammy will be there from Homeland Security. So check it out, and if you're inclined, please join the virtual event. Everybody's going to stay socially distant and safe. Now, I mentioned the P3 phone app. P as in Peter, numeral 3 phone app allows you to report criminal information anonymously, and then information will go to the appropriate agency. If that leads to an arrest of bad actors, there are rewards to be had. This phone app, this particular phone app, works internationally. So you just need one phone app, P3 phone app. You go to lawmatters1030.org webpage, on the blog page and also on the FBI page, you'll see the instructions for this phone app. And I think everybody should have it on their phone just in case. You never know. Okay, we have also on the phone is Paul Karlowitz, who is a professor of the Constitution, and he teaches at University High School. And we have Benny White, who has a law degree, and we're going to talk about what happened on Wednesday and what's the process, what are the procedures, and what got stirred up, and what Constitution amendments can be used. So we're going to talk. Actually, Maya is going to talk first. Maya, if you remember, is our intern from University High School, and she's going to start the show. Maya, floor is yours.
Good morning. Mr. Karlowitz, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Great. So to start off, as many people know, the House has voted to impeach Donald Trump for a second time, but now this will move to the Senate. When the Senate vote takes place, Mr. Karlowitz, could you explain how the Senate holds a hearing for impeachment?
Well, what the Constitution says is that the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. And when the president is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside. So Chief Justice Roberts will be the presiding officer of the Senate when the trial does take place. And then it says that conviction will take place with the Senate acting as the jury if there's a two-thirds vote. And it says that that in these cases of impeachment, that the cases shall not extend further to than two things. One is removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor. And then it would be up to the judicial system as to whether there would be a trial and a conviction for any kind of criminal activity. And so Majority Leader McConnell, who will be the majority leader until Wednesday, had said that he is not going to call the Senate back into session until after the inauguration. And so even though the House could have presented the Senate with the articles of impeachment last week, they chose not to because Senator McConnell said he was not going to call the Senate back in. And so that means that the trial for impeachment will not take place until after President Trump has left office. And that leaves a huge question as to whether is this a legitimate impeachment trial, because the issue of removal obviously would not be the case. But the other part is disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor. And so that's what is going to be the basis of the impeachment trial, is if the Senate chooses to convict by a two-thirds vote, that would disqualify Trump from holding any kind of elective office in the future.
Right. And so you said that the Senate will be called back after the inauguration. And of course, after that, the Democrats will have a majority in the Senate. So how will this impact that vote and the hearing?
Well, it takes two-thirds to convict, so that means 17 Republican senators would have to vote against Donald Trump. And that's the big question, is will there be 17 persons in the Republican caucus in the Senate that are willing to go against a president from their own party? And that brings up a second question, is even if they can't get 17, is the impeachment trial worth it? Now you get into the political element of it, is that what the Democrats are wanting to do is to have the Republican senators take a position. Are you for or against Donald Trump? And that then becomes a wedge issue that they can drive in the Republican Party in elections in the near future. And it's a divisive issue within the Republican Party at this point.
Yeah, that plays right into my next question, which is, you know, like, what does this mean for the Republican Party? We see Republican representatives and senators sort of speaking out against the violence, and just, you know, it seems like this could be a really big issue that could drive a really large wedge between people in this party. What does this mean for the Republican Party? What is its future?
In the short term, it looks like it could be detrimental to the Republican Party in terms of maintaining majorities in Congress and possibly the next presidential election. The national political parties are very resilient organizations. With Watergate, a lot of individuals were saying, oh, the Republican Party is dead after Nixon had to resign. No, not true. Within 7 years, they came back with Reagan and recovered fully. And so long term, this will not have a detrimental effect on the Republican Party at all, but short term it could.
Well, it was nice talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, appreciate that. Benny, what constitutional benefits do we have as citizens to make all this right? If you've got a president who incites a riot, and wouldn't that be considered treason?
Well, it's not treason because he did not engage in support of an enemy, which is required for treason.
Okay.
He may have been involved in sedition or insurrection as a principal. And in order to be determined to be a principal, you don't actually have to walk up the steps of the Capitol with the crowd that broke down the doors and the windows. If you induce other people to do that, you still are a principal, and you're held criminally liable for whatever injury or damage that they did. So that is his real vulnerability, is in a criminal prosecution absent any trial in the Senate. I personally don't think there will be a trial in the Senate. When the Senate convenes, they have to go through the Senate business. They have to decide who the Senate majority leader is going to be, who's going to be in control of the processes in the Senate. If the two senators from Georgia are confirmed by that time, then Senator Schumer will be in control of the Senate. The first decision he's going to have to make is whether or not there is actually going to be a trial in the Senate or whether they're going to proceed with the agenda of the Biden administration. It's my position that a trial is not authorized under the Constitution because the sole purpose of the constitutional provisions is to remove someone from office, and that becomes not applicable when someone has already left the office. In addition, this provision that says that you can disqualify someone from holding any future office, federal office, requires that there has first to be a conviction. And so absent a conviction or absent a trial, the provision that someone could be disqualified from holding federal office, it seems to me to be a moot issue and not something that the Senate trial, such as it will be, could deal with. If I were defending President Trump in the Senate proceedings, my first motion to Justice Roberts would be to get a declaratory judgment that the trial is invalid because of lack of authority of the Senate. And then Justice Roberts has to make a decision on that motion, and it's not appealable or debatable.
So what amendments? I know they were talking about the 25th Amendment, which I thought, go for it. And they chose not to.
So Vice President Pence decided not to do
that. Not to do that.
That is a very prolonged procedure. It was not intended for this purpose. It was intended for the purposes of, like, when President Eisenhower had a heart attack, when various presidents have had strokes, when President Wilson was not able to conduct his responsibilities.
And Reagan used it.
President Reagan was shot and had to undergo surgery. There's a period of time there where the president that was elected is not able to conduct their responsibilities. And so the provisions in the 25th Amendment are that the vice president would take the responsibilities of that office and become the acting president. But that has to involve a majority of the principal officers of the executive department. Now, that is kind of an ambiguous term. It's been interpreted by the courts to require a majority of the cabinet officers. But Vice President Pence starts that procedure. And if it's in his judgment that the president is still capable of carrying out his duties, then he has the discretion not to do it. And that's what Vice President Pence decided to do.
I get the impression that a lot of these people are making their choices based on the fact that their families have been threatened.
I have, no way of determining that. I mean, that certainly is possible.
What is the 14th Amendment?
The 14th Amendment is an amendment that was passed after the Civil War, and it was intended to keep people that were supportive of the secession of the Confederate States from holding office in the new government as representatives or senators. That provision also included another condition that the restriction could be waived by a two-thirds vote of the Congress at that time. So anyone that was in favor of the Congress after the Civil War could be elected as a representative or senator from the various states. My research shows that that amendment has not been very successful because people have resigned their office prior to it being implemented. There was one case back in 1876, I believe it was, where there was a county constable who had been a sheriff, then was elected as a constable. His holding that office was challenged under the 14th Amendment because he had been a sheriff under the Confederacy. And so that was determined to be supportive of the Confederacy. But Whether or not that 14th Amendment condition still applies today under this insurrection, which is vastly different than the Civil War, is really questionable, whether someone could do that and whether someone could be denied holding a federal office. I think the courts, when they take a look at that, would decide that the electors make that decision. The voters can determine the qualification of the candidate running for office, and that would be in line with the decisions that were made when President Obama's birthright was challenged, for example, that it's up to the voters to make those kinds of decisions.
So what do you think is going to happen moving forward?
I think we're going to go through a very tumultuous, polarized political environment for the next at least 4 years. I don't think there's going to be a trial in the Senate. There will be some pro forma activities that go forward. I think Chief Justice Roberts will look at the Constitution to decide that Congress does not have authority to impeach someone that has already been removed from office. Whether or not Donald Trump is prosecuted as a civilian after he leaves office will be completely at the discretion of the new Attorney General. And that decision will rest in large part the same as it was with Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon. How much disruption of the American society do you want to have to prosecute an individual that's already out of office, that has no further authority? What President Trump did was really terrible on Wednesday. I have looked at his comments in detail. Everyone is focusing on the rioting that occurred when people broached the security barriers and entered the Capitol. My main concern with what President did was that he was demanding and trying to intimidate and coerce the vice president to violate the Constitution by rejecting the electoral votes. I don't know who would have advised the president that that was possible. A clear and simple reading of the Constitution would indicate that the vice president has no such authority, and the vice president on Wednesday morning, prior to President Trump's speech, wrote a very detailed four-page letter to the president saying, I do not have authority what you're asking me to do, and therefore I am not going to do this.
Do you think Trump read it?
I'm sure he did, because he refers in his remarks that he is getting some bad reports. And I think the bad report was the letter that he got from the vice president.
I think somebody read it to him. This whole thing that if you look back over the course of the last, when he announced that he was going to run for office, in the rhetoric that has continued for the last 4 years and has become more emboldened with, you know, the things that he thinks are true and things that he wants people to believe, I think there's a huge accountability there. And I just don't know what can they do to either change the law, or he needs to be held accountable. And to just say, oh, he has no more power and, you know, he rides off in the sunset, I think that's unacceptable. Something has to be done.
Well, you know, American citizens have the right to petition their government. So you can call your representatives and make your voices and your concerns known to those folks. And they can do those things. They can write laws or enforce laws and cause the Attorney General to enforce the law. I think a clear case could be made for involvement in both the riots and the insurrection that took place. And I think that President Trump made a lot of remarks during that Wednesday speech, plus during the 4 years that preceded that speech, that would certainly implicate him in what finally occurred there.
Yeah.
Again, as the defense for the president, he made a lot of remarks that would cause someone on a jury to say, well, there's a reasonable explanation of that he didn't do those things. And you've got to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you can introduce doubt in one juror you won't get a conviction. And the attorney general and the prosecutors have to think about those kind of things. How much turmoil do you want to cause in American society to further punish Donald Trump?
He needs to be held accountable. Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is it permissible for a president to pardon himself? There's been a lot of rhetoric going back and forth on this, too.
Well, that question is a real key question in the next 3 days. Does he have the constitutional power to pardon himself? It's unprecedented. I am not aware of any case of any executive, whether it be governor or whether it be the president, pardoning himself. There had always been talk that he would resign on the last day and have Pence pardon him, but I don't know, given the relationship of the president and the vice president right now, whether Pence would be willing to participate in such a show. He has pardoned a lot of his political friends over the last couple of weeks. And even if Trump gets away with pardoning himself, he can only do so for any possible federal offenses he may have committed. That does not absolve him from the half a dozen state proceedings that he may be charged with. And so that does not absolve himself from any legal action that could take place after he leaves office.
So he's still in the hot seat. Regardless.
He's in trouble, especially in his former home state of New York. And so it'll be interesting to see how those state cases proceed against him. I think he should be more worried about the state proceedings against him than any federal issues.
Well, I got the impression that he wanted to stay in office just so to avoid being prosecuted, because as he's president, he gets away with everything. When he's not president, he'll be held accountable.
Yeah, well, if he was reelected, I guess he would have gotten 4 more years of delay on those state cases. And the idea would be is hopefully people would forget and his popularity would raise. And it's hard as a political science teacher. It was very difficult to teach class the last 4 years because he's so unpredictable as the president. He would do things that were counterintuitive and counterproductive that you would not see from any president before him. So it is very difficult to predict what Donald Trump will do, for good or for bad.
Which makes me wonder, is he a true representation of the Republican Party? Is that what the Republican Party has come to?
I don't think so. Again, political parties are very resilient, and I think what's going to happen is there will be always a certain contingent, a block within that party that you see represented by the insurrectionists. But I think what's going to be happening is that as the months pass by and the years pass by, the Republican Party is going to have to divorce itself from Trumpism and make itself more of a mainstream party. And you see this happening very slowly, where you see Senator McConnell and Senator Graham and the previous people that have kind of been supporting Trump in the last 4 years start to drift away right now, because they see the handwriting on the wall that if they want to continue on with a viable political career and have any kind of reelectability, they just can't sustain Trumpism, because Trumpism is borderline on fascism in terms of the cult of the personality, the disregard for our democratic principles. And the Republican Party never has stood for that kind of thing. And I think you'll see a gradual divorce from Trumpism over the next 4 years.
I noticed that Lindsey Graham, you know, I'm out of here, count me out, and then the next day was golfing with him. So,
yeah, that's true. But again, I think once President Trump leaves office, and in many ways, if he is prosecuted, which I think that he certainly will be at the state level, that gradually the Republicans are not going to see much of advantage in keeping him as a mainstay within the party.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few.
Daylight is fading, and the temperature is dropping. You're not only cold, hungry, and lost in a densely wooded area, you're injured. Time is of the essence. SARCI is a highly trained team of dedicated volunteers who work closely with Pima County Search and Rescue to help people in critical situations just like this. To join an exclusive team of heroes, go to SARCI.org. That's SARCI.org. We need your knowledge, experience, and of course, your generous spirit.
Hi, I'm Maya Thompson, producer for the Law Matters live show that airs Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, we'll hear from IRS Special Agent Brian Watson and Enrolled Agent Mark Barnes to get you ready for tax season. This show depends on your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute. If you missed us live, check out Law Matters on iTunes, Google Play, and of course, lawmatters1030.org. Now get your questions ready and join our conversation at 790-2040.
Hi, this is Sherry. If you think your current interest rate is high and refinancing is on your mind, give me a call at 520-310-9900. Maybe you're thinking about purchasing a new home while rates are low. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. Perhaps you just want to know how a reverse mortgage can improve your life. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. I can help you with all your mortgage needs, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
This is Nathan Chabon, producer for Law Matters. I have a goal to reach, and I need your help. I want to put the DEA out of business. That's right, the Drug Enforcement Agency. If you have an addiction problem or know someone who does, please reach out to lawmatters1030.org and click the DEA tab for more information. Reaching out is the first step. We have the resources if you have the will. You can beat this demon and help me put the Drug Enforcement Agency out of business.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Thanks for staying with us. If you have any questions for our guests, the number is 790-2040. And I want to talk with some of the news stations. I know Steve Bannon is a co-founder of a news station, and he's very anti-establishment, anti-government, anti-law enforcement, anti. And I know a lot of the stuff that is promoted on his particular station is not necessarily true. Some propaganda comes out. And it made me think about years ago, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he said something about George W. Bush that was just a bold-faced lie. And he got called out on it. And his response was, "I am not a news anchor. I'm an entertainer." And that was like the last time I listened to him. Because what he was doing is just stirring it up. And I think Steve Bannon and his media outlet is stirring it up, and it's not necessarily true. And I, again, ask people, listen to all the stations. Don't just focus, zero in on one. It's like a brainwashing. You're hearing something, but you're not hearing all of it. So what do you think is going to happen with Trump, Benny, with Trump's children?
Well, Donald Jr. has been very active on the campaign trail, promoting his father and other Republican candidates as well. But he's also been promoting himself. So I think there's a very good likelihood that he may want to be continue to be in a prominent role in the Republican Party and on the national political stage. I think it's one of the wives is now talking about running for senator in North Carolina, and that is a possibility. I'm not familiar with North Carolina politics other than Senator Tillis, but that's a possibility. I don't know. You know, in Arizona, and I think nationwide, there are a large number of people that are really adamantly pro-Trump people because of his anti-establishment rhetoric. And unfortunately, or for me, being a Republican, a lot of these pro-Trump people are anti-Republican as well. They're looking for something else rather than the Republican.
Well, you're not alone. They're anti-Democrats, too.
Well, they're anti-establishment people, and that's been a thread that has gone through our politics for centuries.
Yeah.
So that may build. I don't know. I try to look at political philosophies and try to get a handle on what populism means and what a populist president means. And I don't really have a good, clear understanding of that. It seems to me that populism is promising the people whatever they want or whatever you determine they want. But it's in that definition of whatever they want where people inject their own agendas. And so I'm not sure that it's ever possible to decide what the people writ large really means.
And I've listened to a lot of people in the last week or so, and I get the impression that they hear what they want to hear, and they're not going to hear a variation of what their thought process is.
Sure, they read the newspapers they want to read. They engage in a political discussion they want to be engaged in. They go to the websites that they want to go, and whenever those websites turn on them, or the newscast or whatever, then they revolt and go someplace else.
Do you think any of these people who are spewing all this rhetoric prior to what happened at the Capitol have any accountability for the deaths that took place?
Yes, I do. And it's not just what happened on that particular day. It's this whole idea that we want to promote false information that supports our ideology or whatever our system of beliefs are. And that went on for a very long time, since 2000, since my friend George Bush was elected. That's been a part of our politics.
You're talking about the dad, George Bush?
No.
You're talking about George W.?
George W. He was harassed and harangued from day one in his administration, and as a result had a very ineffective administration, in large part by not being able to get much going through the Congress. And then, of course, we went to war, and that disrupted everything that was happening in this country, and we're still involved in the debates that occurred during that era.
I think it was George W. that put together the pandemic office. We need to prepare in case something happens. On one of his holidays, he read a book about a pandemic and thought, oh, we're not prepared. We better put something together. And hats off to him for that, although I didn't vote for him. I voted for his dad, but I didn't vote for him. I'm an independent.
I drank beer with him, so I had an obligation.
I would have drank beer with him. I just didn't think he had the wherewithal to run the country. But he's been, now he looks like, a Boy Scout compared to what's been going on.
I had an opportunity to meet with George a couple of years ago at his presidential library, and we talked briefly about President Bush, and he was very reserved in his comments, but it was very obvious that he did not approve of the behavior of the current president.
Oh, you mean President Trump?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there's, I think, and it says something when all the former presidents come out and do something, and Trump is sitting in his office stewing, not denouncing anything, not congratulating people, just stewing about his own self.
Now, go back to your question about accountability. It's not just the people in Congress that were involved in that. There's people in the state legislators. And the voters, when they go to the polls in the next election, need to be reminded of those things as indicators of how those various candidates think about things. whether they just blow with the political winds or they are base their decisions on some principles that you can either accept or reject.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a popularity contest. We need a government that is actually competent and functional. And we need good people that are smart and make good rational decisions.
For the greater good, not for themselves.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that they were talking about. They're asking a lot of people that are in Congress or have a political agenda who are a part of this attack on the Capitol to resign or somehow get them out of office. Is there, Paul, is there something in the Constitution that would remedy that?
Well, are you talking about the behavior of the senator from Missouri, Senator Hawley?
See, I wasn't going to name him, but sure, let's talk about him.
Well, the Congress has the ability to seat its own members. They could censure him. The Senate did that with Joe McCarthy way back in the 50s after he was found culpable of the communist witch hunts. So the Senate certainly could do that, but again, do they have enough votes to do that and expel him? And of course, the voters of Missouri have the right to elect whom they wish to elect. It's a matter of will time just tell that is Trumpism on the wane, and therefore those individuals that have been out front in supporting the president's actions even after what happened on January 6th are they an electable entity any longer? Because again, many people believe that Senator Cruz and Senator Hawley are trying to appropriate the Trump constituency, that approximate 40% of the population that seems to follow Trump regardless of how accurate and truthful his statements are or how incendiary his rhetoric is. And they're hoping to make that possibly into a nomination for the Republican ticket in 2024.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll put my defense attorney hat back on again a little bit with Senator Hawley and Representative Brooks, who were the original objectors. I think the other 106 members of the House that came on board with the objections were jumping onto a political bandwagon, but they were raised an objection to the electors in a constitutional process which is available to them when the electors are certified on January 6th. And they did that because they had questions about the conduct of the elections. And they were attempting, probably non-productively, to have an investigation of those complaints that had been raised. I think a lot of the complaints that were raised were very spurious. For example, the comments about the Dominion machines, I've never seen any substantiation of any of those claims or the results being changed by manipulating the software of the computers. But things did happen. Here in Arizona, for example, I think we had about 60,000 ballots that were counted that should not have been counted. These were people that registered after the registration deadline. That was caused by a federal judge changing our election laws at the date of the deadline.
Isn't that what the Secretary of State, when we were talking earlier, that she keeps moving the goalposts and she doesn't have the power to do it?
This Secretary of State and previous Secretaries of State have done that same thing. I have produced a document that I've sent to the Attorney General and the legislators that indicates my opinion that the whole system we have of Fed-only voters is unconstitutional in numerous respects. First, it was established unconstitutionally by Secretary Bennett. He created new law. He does not have the authority to do that. Secondly, the U.S. Constitution requires that in order to be able to vote for a member of the House of Representatives or a U.S. Senator, you have to be able to vote for the members of the state legislature. Well, when Secretary Bennett set up the Fed-only system, he declared unilaterally that Fed-only voters could only vote for federal offices. They could not vote for the Arizona legislature. So those people, even though they're registered to vote under that unconstitutional system, they're not authorized by the U.S. Constitution to vote for House members or senators.
So can he get in trouble for doing that?
Well, you know, I guess he could, or that the whole system could be declared unconstitutional and the legislature could deal with it, which they should.
What about these members of the government who were at the Capitol building? Can they be arrested for domestic terrorism?
There's been claims that there were some tours given by members.
Yes.
In the days prior to the insurrection.
Right.
That facilitated parts of the insurrection. Those all should be investigated. And if, in fact, there is a finding by the investigators and the prosecutors, then they should be prosecuted. But the idea that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrat majority in the House should be able to remove duly elected representatives because they disagree with their political philosophy is nonsensical and completely anti-American.
Okay, I hadn't heard that she was doing that. I think what I heard, and this is going back to what you want to hear, is, you know, if they took part in this situation, that they should be held accountable for it.
Well, there's a suggestion by members of the House that all 107 who objected to the acceptance of the electors should be removed from Congress.
Jeez.
I mean, that's ridiculous. I don't even understand how people think that way, that wind up getting elected to Congress.
Yeah. I don't know how they think that way either. It's just a bag of worms.
It is. It's an American system. I've traveled all over the world. I've seen a lot of other systems. You know, it's the government we have, but it's better than the rest.
It's better than the rest. Absolutely it is. It doesn't always work really well. But, you know, I've heard some people saying that, well, that's just Trump being Trump. And, you know, it is what it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's just Putin being Putin. It is what it is. People need to be held accountable. And if he's not impeached, if obviously they're not going to use the 25th Amendment, should he be sanctioned?
Well, he has been impeached twice.
Well, twice, but I mean, they're not following through with...
Well, that's a fairly significant black mark on your name and on your history. And that will never be removed.
As it shouldn't be. Okay, we have a caller. Richard, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, he will be impeached again, and then he will never be able to serve in office again in the United States. That's what we want to do. We want to drive a stake through his heart, make sure he can never commit treason and again in our country and attack our nation again. And all these legislators and congressmen who voted to overturn a legitimate election, they attacked our democracy. They've committed election fraud. And not only that, it's sedition and it's treason. And they should be banned from ever serving in office again another day in this country. And anybody that, and all these guys up there in Phoenix, Gosar, Biggs, and these people that directed this invasion into our Capitol building should be charged with felonies and federal crimes to the highest degree of the law. We have got to purge this cult from our nation. And I hope the federal government goes full bore and really deep after all these cultists that have attacked our country now for 4 long years. And you placated George W. Bush. You complimented him. But he paved the way for Donald Trump. He lied to go to war. He and Cheney committed war crimes. They are convicted war criminals in Malaysia, in the Malaysia War Tribunal, them and Tony Blair. The Netherlands wouldn't do it because they put too much pressure on The Hague. But look, we've got a cultish Republican Party that has viciously attacked our country, other countries, and threatened our very democracy. So it's no time to placate or compliment these cultists. They have done tremendous damage to our country. And I am all in favor of purging them completely out of our nation.
Okay, thank you for calling. I appreciate your comments. And people, as you hear, are very passionate about what's happened. My question for you, Paul, is do you think that they're going to make a change to the Constitution regarding self-pardon?
I don't think so. Amending the Constitution is an extremely difficult process. It takes there's two ways to do it. One, you can have the state legislatures initiate it with two-thirds of the state legislatures calling for a constitutional convention. That's unlikely to happen. And then if they do, then the amendments suggested or the new Constitution written would have to be ratified by three-fourths of the states. The other method that's been used now 27 times is two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate. They pass a joint resolution, which is then sent to the states for ratification. I don't think that you would have support of two-thirds of both houses of Congress and three-fourths of the state legislatures to make a change in the Constitution that many would say would be just so minute that it's not worth going through the political struggle.
Okay, we have another listener. Chris, what's on your mind?
I'd just like to say that Congress is the problem, and we need term limits yesterday, and it would be good if we would get back to adhering to the Constitution, and America basically needs a civic lesson, and that's just my comment.
Okay, I appreciate you listening. So, Benny, what are your thoughts? What you just heard?
Well, a big part of what you do is, a part of this civic lesson.
That's right.
We talk about the Constitution and the rule of law, and we have different opinions. You know, Paul and I come from different perspectives on many of these issues, but it's important to talk about the Constitution and talk about the laws. And if we don't like the laws or we don't like the Constitution, we can change it. There are methods, even though it is very difficult, especially with the Constitution, to change. It has been done 27 times, so we can do it again. But the laws are useful, but they need to be reviewed from time to time and amended as necessary to accommodate the changes in our society.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that some of the things we've never had a president pardon himself, and I just find it appalling that a president would pardon all his criminal friends that he served with or had serving for him. And I just think that's wrong. And these people who have broken the law and did what they did need to be held accountable and not just, oh, I pardon you. You can go on a trip on your yacht someplace and continue to spew propaganda.
As Paul correctly pointed out, the pardon would only apply to federal offenses.
Right.
It would not apply to the state or the municipal, in the case of District of Columbia, offenses. And so while the president might be able to escape some of the legal proceedings, I'm sure that if he were to pardon himself from the federal offenses, that would give a large impetus to various jurisdictions to aggressively pursue their criminal investigations and criminal proceedings.
Because he's admitting guilt if he pardons himself.
That's one perspective of it, yes.
And what's another one?
Well, that you want to just avoid the litigation, like General Flynn. The pardon there was to, you know, he has been convicted, but it's just to remove him from further prosecution. He's been financially destroyed,
Well, speaking of finances, when Trump announced that he was going to run for office, he applied for over 200 trademarks for his name and was issued almost 30 of them. And people don't realize he has been making money hand over fist every time you buy a bumper sticker, one of those hats. And, you know, anything that has the Trump name on it, you're contributing to his coffers. And I had the impression he was prolonging, you know, the ratification of the election so that he could continue to earn money and, you know, help me with my legal fund and everything. And he made over $600 million just on the stuff that he sold and had other people selling for him. And paperwork had been filed, and we're going to have James Traynor on again in a couple of weeks. Paperwork had been filed that he kept 60% of whatever was raised, and the GOP got 40%. And that's supposedly legal.
Well, as I recall, there was a Secretary of State that engaged in similar activities.
Yeah? Who?
Hillary Clinton.
Did she do that?
Under the Clinton Foundation.
And then she only give a portion of what whatever was raised? That should be, I don't care who's doing it, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And yeah, she should be held accountable too.
But she's not.
Yeah, but I think what's happened recently is going to put a big spotlight on some of these, you know, okay, that's what you do. You're running office for office and this is what you're doing. You're making money on something you're not supposed to be making money on.
But remember, those laws and changes are not enacted by philosopher kings. They're enacted by politicians.
That's true. So if he gets removed from office, if they go through with the impeachment and they remove all his benefits, his retirement benefits, do you think that's punishment enough?
I would think so. He will be out of office. The question is the remaining benefits. I remember when Gerald Ford became the president after Richard Nixon left office, I wrote a real scathing letter to President Ford saying that Richard Nixon should never have any benefit of office, including his post-elect or post-office activities. Of course, that didn't go anywhere, but you know, that's not a novel idea.
No, and I think he should be stripped from all the benefits, but I think if that's the only thing that happens to him, all these people, these families from the five people that were killed, I think they're going to have different thoughts.
Well, I think he certainly has some responsibility for what happened there. What that level of responsibility is something that would have to be determined by a jury.
Oh, I heard on the news that he wants to have a band playing and a red carpet, and, you know, for his exit, he wants to take away all the attention from the inauguration and put it on himself so that he can walk out with the band playing, have his military parade. So I want to remind everybody that there is an event today, the human trafficking, anti-human trafficking. We're not going to do human trafficking. That would be bad. At 2 o'clock, and if you go to our website, lawmatters1030.org, there's a flyer on the event page, and you can see what's going on and where you need to go to take part in this. It's virtual, so you can stay home and learn a lot. And I want to remind you, too, that the P3 phone app is on the blog page. And if you go to the P3 phone app, just download it on your phone. You might have information that you want to share. This is a way of doing it anonymously, and there are rewards to be had. And this particular app works internationally. It's pretty awesome. And I want to thank everybody for coming on the show. Paul, thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And Benny, thank you.
Glad to be here, and hopefully the listeners got something out of it.
I hope so, too, because, you know, it's not, you know, it's the process, and we all have to respect the process. I know people get emotional and passionate about things. And Maya, thank you for coming on and being an intern. Want everybody to stay safe, stay positive. We'll get through this. Shop local, and we'll see you next week.